It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast.
Is the founder and CEO of Balcony Capital. It's a boutique firm for high net worth and high income individuals that specializes in a seldomly invested but well-known property type that performs better than most others. And having started his journey in private markets back in 2012, this gentleman has successfully been involved with over $55 million in assets under management through acquisition, development, repositioning, disposition, strategic planning. And it's going to be really exciting because this is one of my favorite topics. Let's welcome Travis Baucom. Travis, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing fantastic. Glad you're here. And I'd like to hear how you got into your first deal. Let's jump right into it because That's usually a pretty good story, right?
Yeah, so I'm in the self-storage space, but when I got into real estate, easiest asset class to get into is residential. So I bought a HUD home straight from the MLS back when you could do that. You could get really good deals off the MLS. Okay. 2012, we bought it, we fixed it up and had it rented out before my first mortgage payment was due. And we really liked that model. We essentially had zero money out of pocket. We had a really favorable bank, gave us essentially 100% loan to value or loan to cost. And then we had it rented out before we had to pay a mortgage. So we thought, man, this is great. We should do this as many times as they'll let us. And so that was my first deal. And then we went on and did, because we liked it so much, we went on and did 400 other deals after that.
Wow. And you've done this all in the last 10 years, huh? From what I'm picking up.
Yes, sir. That was 2012. And then we bought most of those houses from 2012 to 2018, realized that my wealth goals were not going to be met unless I switched over to commercial. Yeah. I had owned a couple of apartments. I did not like having just a lot of people under one roof, a lot of issues at those smaller apartments I had. And so I'm like, if a 20 unit apartment has this much issues and 100 units apartments probably gonna have five times as much issues. And so I chose to go a different route, kind of the non-habitable real estate route. And we started buying storage facilities around 2021. We had a lot of rentals in 2018, had to sell all those off. And then we took that money and started buying storage facilities with it.
So Robert Kiyosaki would be proud, right? If you've ever played the game Cashflow, he's got these small deals and he's got big deals and you've moved into the big deals and you're in one of my favorite spaces. I'm not a big real estate guy, although I do have a bit. And if I were going to continue to do more real estate, it would be in self-storage and mobile home parks. Those are the two things that I just think are phenomenal businesses. I'm over in Athens, Greece right now. You cannot find a self-storage business here. They just culturally don't do it. But when you look at what we do in the United States and other places, it's crazy how much self-storage we use. It's just a mind-boggling business for me. So
yeah, Americans don't like to throw away things. And so, this sentimental... Americans have a lot of wealth. They have, collectively compared to other countries, you have a lot of culturally, you have the inability to throw things away because they have sentimental value. And then, we like toys as well. And so all those things accumulate to, needing some sort of extra space to be able to put our stuff.
And so I heard it's been an interesting take on the reason that we don't throw things out. And it's probably everywhere because I have some friends that don't throw stuff out either. It's that we put so much emotional investment into buying stuff, not just the regular investment, but they like picking out, a pair of shoes or clothes or, whatever, anything. And so we have all this investment mentally in it. That as soon as we throw it out, it's like we're throwing out a part of our identity. So we just don't throw stuff out. We'd rather store it and then throw it out 10 years later after it's out of style or something. I don't know. But anyway, good for you because you're in the business that helps people do that. So that's really cool. So how do you structure these deals? Obviously, they're different from the first house that you told us about just a second ago. How do you structure these deals? How do they work? And are they easy to find?
Deals are getting harder to find every day. Unless your risk threshold's really low and you just want to buy anything and you just hope that it works out if you're actually trying to make money, it's things are getting more difficult every month when the Fed meets. It gets more and more difficult to find a deal because your yield is getting suppressed. Your yield is maybe even going away. We've had deals that were really good deals, and when we, you know, 6 months after we started working on that deal, they weren't a good deal by the time, you know, Jerome Powell met a couple more times. And so as far as structuring it, we tend to structure them through, you know, general partnerships. So general partner, limited partner, a syndication model is the most common used term that we use. We'll take a portion of the equity, typically do all the operations, take on the debt, and then we give a good chunk of the equity to our private lenders or private capital that want to contribute, you know, anywhere from 25 grand to 250 grand per deal. And then on the back end, typically those are paying a 6 to 8% cash on cash that's been suppressed over the last year. And then when we sell, they're getting an 18 to 22% internal rate of return.
Wow. Pretty impressive. And do you operate these, or do you have an operating company, or do you kind of on an individual basis, you know, let somebody live there and let them operate? How does all that stuff work?
Yeah, we definitely don't want anyone to live there. That you know, going back to that non-habitable thing, I want that. I'm a purist on that. I don't even want my manager to stay there. Most of the time we tear down the management quarters on those or convert it to units. But typically, we, depending on where it's at, if it's a super rural area that we're buying a facility at or a collection of facilities, we'll have an office where someone stays at, you know, 30 hours a week or so. But most of them we run remotely. We have, we run it through a call center out of a small town in Lufkin, Texas. Basically each one, we have typically women that are in charge of each of one of the facilities as the manager. They make sure that rents have come in, that overlocks are getting put on, the gates are working, fences aren't getting torn down, security cameras are working, and then making sure they're really driving home the bookings, that sort of thing. For every unit they fill up, they get $10. And then, you know, for a stay home mom or someone who's retired, that's that, and, you know, if they do five of those, that's $50. That's almost a week of groceries in some of these small towns of Texas. So
this is interesting to me because I walk in and I want to rent a garage size unit. And there's nobody on site from what I'm hearing from you. There's somebody that's remote. How are they going to let me in? I guess you're going to give me a code or something.
Every facility has a huge sign that has a QR code in a website and a phone number. So like, wow. Depending on if you want to talk to someone, you can call them and rent a unit. If you just want to click a QR code, you can rent on all of our facilities. You can rent without ever talking to a human being. Wow. All we have to do on the back end is finalize it. And we tend to call you just to double check that you're a real person and not some sort of bot. But you can sign a lease, you can add your credit card information. You can put your insurance information on all online without ever having to talk to a human. It's great.
That's really cool, actually. I had not expected that. And then when somebody doesn't pay and you and you've got to put a lock on their unit, I guess there's somebody on site that they call and they change the locks. Hey, it's Mark Yeagy, author of this book on Covered Calls, here to tell you about my cash flow machine trading program that's designed to show you how I make safe, reliable income. Now, I shoot for 2 to 4% a month of income in my portfolio, and we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of it is that it only takes me about 20 minutes a week, maybe to an hour to implement. Now, while 2 to 4% a month may not sound like much, I show you exactly how I took my IRA from $111,000 to over $700,000 in just 23 months without huge risk. Yes, I got a little lucky, I gotta say, but I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io, or better yet, go to this link to get access to videos and masterclasses that explain the entire process, the risks and rewards even more. See you there.
Yeah, we have a fractional facilities manager, for lack of a better term. So someone that comes and checks on it at least once a week, mows the yard. If there's yard, we tend to try to get rid of all the vegetation. So they'll spray for weeds, they'll spray, they'll blow the aisles down so that if there's any trash, they'll throw away stuff they need to throw away. And then they'll show up and put locks on for any unit, for any tenant that hasn't paid.
Dude, you've thought of everything. Like, that's awesome. I just love it. It's almost turnkey, and sounds like such a great business to run. And what happens when they don't pay and you got to auction off their stuff?
Yeah, you know, the typical thing, that's a great, actually, compared to other pieces of real estate, other asset classes, that's a great thing because it's a non-habitable property. So you don't have to go in front of a judge to get permission to kick their stuff out. You just have to post, in Texas, at least, you just had to post in a newspaper. After, if they're 15 days late, you can post a newspaper, and then 7 days later, you post the newspaper again. And then at that point, you just hire an auctioneer to auction their stuff off. There's websites you can do it through, like latetolien.com. You know, we don't use any of those. We use live auctioneers because it's just kind of one way we do it. And then, you can kick their stuff out, or you can get their stuff out and someone can pay pennies on a dollar for a whole bunch of stuff that no one else wanted. And then typically we make the person who won the auction sign a lease, so we have a tenant immediately. So we have zero, for the most part, we have 0 days lost of revenue. And so we don't have any vacancy left. We have, you know, a little bit, but generally speaking, it's very low compared to like a house or an apartment where you have to go and paint, put new carpet down, maybe put some new cabinets up, and who else knows what. But yeah, the great thing about storage is a very efficient model. You don't have a lot of overhead. You don't have a lot of, it's very top flight. And then when you act in the rare occasion that you have to kick someone's stuff out, it's also very efficient. So
yeah, you've got everything covered, it sounds like. And so your model is not to teach people how to find a self-storage building, buy it, you know, mow down all the aisles of vegetation and, you know, put in these QR code systems. From what I'm hearing, your model is to find investors who are interested in some passive income. You own and operate the property, but share it back with the GPs or the partners, right?
That's exactly true. At this point, we're not educators. We want to continue to buy. We want to continue to operate the facilities and then sell them later on at a cap. We tend to sell all of our facilities. Our specialty is buying in kind of tertiary market where no one else is buying. Going in there, improving rents 20 to 40% within a short time, you know, 12 to 18 months, and then typically listing it for sale for someone else to kind of take on the rest of the bulk of the operations.
Wow. And so what is it that you guys do that maybe nobody else does? What makes you so special?
It's a really low hanging bar as far as special goes. there's not a lot of ingenuity in self-storage, but one thing I would say is that we tend to want to buy properties that have, not only do they have lower than market rent, but they also have expansion rooms, so we could go in and put modular units. So if I were to build a facility, that typically takes 6 to 9 months, depending on the jurisdiction and the concrete, you know, that sort of thing. With modular units, we just did one, and it took 9 days to go from dirt work to being able to rent a unit out. And so we really are trying to always try to make it more efficient. But I would say if there's something that we specialize in, adding expansion units through modular units quicker than everyone else, so that we're like eliminating the 6 months to 9 months that it takes and then to fill it up. And so.
Wow. And so a modular unit is what, one of those Butler buildings, or is it a building that you actually, you know, build on site with metal, or you just bring it on site and it's already ready? How does that work?
Yeah. It actually comes on a truck. You can put 10 of these, you know, basically 10 by 10. You can get two 10 by 10s or one 10 by 20. Each is one unit, and you can get 10 of those on a truck. So we'll do the dirt work, typically, you know, caliche or, you know, crushed concrete, and then we'll put the units on. They build them on site. It takes about a day to build them, to build all of them. We just put 60 of these in a mid-sized town in Texas, and they're already on our website for you to rent. And that started less than 9 days ago.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
And it, they make an older facility look so sharp because they're not cheap. They look just like a, once you trim them out, they look just like an existing, like an actual facility.
Okay.
So it's great. Yeah.
And I suspect the permitting is a lot easier since you're just popping something on the ground.
Well, it's not considered real estate, so it's not, you don't have to get it permitted.
Yeah. Brilliant. Brilliant. Wow. Okay. So what am I mean, this sounds too good to be true for a lot of people, I'm sure. So what am I not asking you that I should be asking you? How about that one?
Yeah, it really is as good as it is. The hard thing is the deals are slowly going away just because of, you know, when you're borrowing money at 9% and you're, yeah, you know, a seller wants a 6% cap for a, it makes it challenging. When a seller wanted a 6 cap and you could borrow money at 5.75, you're like, oh, this is still makes sense because we're going to raise rents and make this thing at 11 cap. But when you're borrowing at 9% you still can make an 11 cap. Your yield is so much smaller. I would say if for your listeners, whether it's me or someone else, just make sure that you're really diving into the numbers. Because right now, if a pro forma is not showing a suppression in interest rates, I mean, you know, like if it's not 9 and your exit interest rate is 11, if you're not using that, then typically you probably have a syndicator that's a little bit too ambitious. And so that's something that someone is going to need to pay attention to. I don't think we're going to be very aggressive on rents. Over the last 2 years, we've been able to raise rents like anywhere from 20 to 70% per facility. Yeah. I don't think we're going to be able to do that over the next 12 to 24 months, maybe 5% per year, which still yield. The juice is going to be, or the return is going to be made in these modular units, expanding properties, you know, buying up trying to buy up the entire market in a small town, as opposed to like buying just one facility. It's been pretty easy for syndicators and other investors. I think it's going to get challenging. You're going to see people separating from, you know, things just working out because the market's going up and things just working out because they're really smart and they've really done all their due diligence and stuff.
And so you don't think our inflationary environment is going to continue to translate to higher rents?
We are not underwriting substantially higher rents. We are underwriting like we're trending with inflation, so 4 to 8%. But we aren't going like, oh well, next year we can raise 20%, then the next year after that we can raise 20%, which is what we've been able to do for the last few years. And then you know, who knows if that inflation is going to catch up with the interest rate. And so, if the interest rate is also going up while you raise it 5 to 8%, then your yield is still going to be the same as it was if you didn't do anything to the facility.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see it being in this interest rate environment. I can see it being close to upside down if you mess up the numbers.
Yep. Yeah. And that's when you're losing money and you're not able to raise rents, you're not able to shave off something, it gets real painful.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a big one. That's where something could go wrong if you don't know what you're doing. That makes sense. Wow. Okay, cool. Really good stuff. How do people get a hold of you and work with you?
Yeah, the best way is through our website. It's www.investinstoragedeals.com. If you scroll at the bottom, there's a little small form you can fill out and we'll reach out to you.
Amazing. Okay, so we'll put that in the show notes. Any final thoughts? Anything you'd like to leave our listeners and viewers?
Yeah, given what you told me about your listenership, I would say just be real. Everyone needs to be real careful on who they're investing in. Invest in people who have great track records and also in asset classes that have amazing track records. Storage has the best track record. If you're when it comes to real estate, they have a 40-year track record that outperforms all the other asset classes. And so that's what I'd recommend.
Amazing. Well, listen, thank you for your time, your wisdom, for being on the show. I learned a lot of stuff from you today and I'm actually fascinated by your business. So hope you guys reach out to Travis. He's got some good stuff. Sounds like he's got a really good system and seems like it can help you a lot. So Travis, thank you so much for being on. And like I say to everybody else who's listening and viewing, never give up your power and your health, your wealth, or your time. See you next time. Have a good day, everybody. And thanks, Travis.
Thanks, Mark.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.